Genesis 25. Can you believe we're only halfway through? I mean, we're already halfway through. Things will pick up soon, though, because this is the end of Abraham. Yeah, cue the creepy music. The end of Abraham. Takes a new wife. A lot of speculation that it was just a concubine, but she's listed by name in the scriptural story. And we are told that he has children with her. That does two things. Because this guy's old. One, it proves that the fertility issue with Sarah was not Abraham's problem. Two, it proves that Isaac's birth was truly a miracle. And it's funny, just that one little paragraph. And Abraham took a wife, Keturah, and had sons by her. Two beautiful statements of the faithfulness of God. A, Abraham was still, it was not his problem. He was not the cause of her infertility. God was. He held her back from having children for a very specific reason. He made a statement to the surrounding culture, to Abraham himself, to all of the coming extended family. Isaac's birth was a miracle. Isaac's birth was planned. Isaac's birth was deliberate and of God. Remember the bit about the name of God given? God sees, hears, slash, has a colloquial understanding of God saw to it or God sees to it. His promise was assured. And then there's many, can't say that enough, more descendants. Abraham, we are told, gave, and we have to use this word loosely, everything to Isaac. But like certain legal documents, when you read the fine print, you realize, wait, all the other kids got gifts. And I know even our American inheritance laws do this. If you gift people in your family or external to your family within an appropriate, I don't know the timeline, but if you do it long enough before you die and your will is executed, there is no taxation involved and it is not subject to probate, whatever you gave away in that time frame. He did the same thing. He ensured Isaac received all the blessings, all the rights of the landowner title holder. Like in British nobility, the eldest son. He wasn't the eldest son, not blood, but he was the line of promise. And I know I'm beating a dead horse, but God ignores human laws of primogeniture. The firstborn person mean nothing to him. He is a God of selection, or election, if you prefer the term. If you're a guy in the old Calvinist, you prefer that one. But he gave them sufficient wealth to launch them, to give them a start. It probably involved certain weight of various monies, or precious metals. Guaranteed it involves livestock, because this is an agrarian society. They are reliant upon trade, critters, and things they can grow. So, he launches them out. Okay, he's provided for his family now. But then he sends them far away. Here's your presents. Go away. It's more, no, I will secure my son's turf. It's a lot of trouble to get my charter here this morning after I left it. I was telling Ron earlier, if this thing wasn't held on by a wire, I'd leave it somewhere. But the key is that he sends them away to ensure the integrity of Isaac's land inheritance, because that's what God promised. The names listed in that mini genealogy still have significance in modern day Saudi Arabia. There are still those names, or the root of those names today in Saudi Arabia, which lends weight to Muhammad's assertion that, you know, they were all descended from Ishmael, because a lot of the names in Ishmael's clans were also found in modern Saudi Arabia. Midianites, one of those sons of Keturah was a Midian, his name was Midian. Oh, they pop up. They pop up a lot in Israel's future, especially post-Exodus and the conquest of the Promised Land. You read through Joshua and Judges, you hear about the Midianites all the time. Yeah, because they were related, but not all caps, the line. So, Abraham dies. I love the phrase. I love the biblical language on this. He died old and full of years. It means a complete life. He had a full life, lived it to the nth degree. And then God said, okay, you're done with your task. Come to me. 175. Anybody want to volunteer to stick around that long? Not this little gray guy. It's hard enough just keeping going every day here. Besides, if I live to 175, I might have to go through some of the nasty stuff from Revelation. I don't know that for sure, but it could happen. Isaac and Ishmael came together for the short period of mourning and to bury him alongside of his wife Sarah in the cave of Machpelah that he had bought as a permanent stake in the promised to his descendants land. So Abraham is laid to rest in the same place. The roots are getting deeper in the promised land. Now that Abraham is dead, the blessing confers, transfers, transmits, descends, however, pick one, to Isaac. And Abraham's decisions with the other children have guaranteed that the inheritance of title, land, primary wealth, and all the rights and all the rights and responsibilities pertaining thereto, of lordship, of titular responsibility, would be conferred to Isaac. Reiterates, Isaac is the line of promise. Then we have an interlude, just a brief, what is that, seven verses? The genealogy of Ishmael. You find it interesting that God is, through his word, has inspired the recording of all these things, this massive focus on this single man who became a single family, who became a father to two. But the second born was the one that was important. And yet, God impelled, inspired, caused the line of Ishmael to be laid out. He focused on him temporarily. Why? Because he promised to Ishmael's mother. Remember when Hagar fled? because Sarah got a little disgruntled. No, she got nasty. She got mean. She abused her handmaid. She runs into the desert. She's trying to get back to Egypt, to her people. They run out of water, they're toast. That is not a hospitable land, let me tell you. What did God say? Go back. Endure. The son you bear will be the father of 12 princes. He too will become a mighty nation. Oh my goodness, how do you do that? Well, you go back and you endure. Again, many of these names exist in the Saudi kingdoms today. I think it was necessary because in order for everything to come down to a boil at Israel in the final Armageddon, those two clans have to butt heads for the centuries, for the millennia. And it gave Muhammad and his...
Can I say something?
Absolutely. Please.
I might be changing the subject, but when you talked about the second born, but don't you think that's interesting how over how many years, I don't understand, but because we do the firstborn male is the most important of
them. Absolutely.
So how did that change, I wonder?
God said so. I mean, honestly, at its heart, God said, okay, you took matters into your own hands. You fathered a child with your wife's handmaid. Even though it was legal, according to the laws of the land at that time, if you didn't have an heir produced by your first wife, primary wife, head wife, chief wife, there's all kinds of names,
yeah.
But you know, she's the one. If you didn't have an heir, you could father a child of a servant or slave in the household, and she would inherit that child. And the laws said this child is now Abraham's, or, you know, the head of the house, and it's yours.
Wow.
Because the slave belonged to you. So that's what happened there. But God said, Abraham and Sarah, your son is the one.
Okay.
Your son is the one. And when God sets out to do, he does. So that's why it changed in this instance. And again, that's why we can use that as an argument to those who say, oh yeah, the Bible's just a collection of stories from the day. It has no significance. Wait a minute. If it was just a collection of stories, Ishmael would have been firstborn, no matter what. All the rights, all the title, all the wealth would have gone to him.
I think in this story...
And then we'll get back to Leonard.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is something, if you look at the historic event, Sarah was worried too much. And she said, "Can't, because I'm old."
Only a little.
Yeah. And so then he said, okay, I give you my servant.
And, yeah.
And so it's human choices and God chosen people.
Yeah. That's a very good way to look at that. Because Sarah was necessarily worried because without an heir, if Abraham dies, nobody takes care of her. If she has no child of her own, she's on the street or the desert. Yeah.
I think what it boils down to is Ishmael was the child of the flesh and Isaac was the child of promise.
Promise or child of spirit.
Yeah.
Because it was a spiritual miracle.
Yeah.
That Sarah regained fertility a little over 90 years of age. I mean, like I said before, I grew up in an OBGYN's house. That doesn't happen, kids. Doesn't happen.
And it's interesting that after that, Sarah didn't have any more children.
No. One time.
One time.
But that was enough.
Yes.
Because God said, this is sufficient. I am sufficient. I made a promise. But I made a promise to Abraham and those of your line. Well, guess what? Ishmael's blood. So, this is where this comes down. God fulfilled his promise to Hagar. As far as we know, she wasn't even alive anymore. But we're not told, so maybe she was.
Unlike human beings, God never tries. God never tries to accomplish his
purpose. Are you going all Yoda on me? You're just going to try to or do not?
Exactly. God does.
Can you just picture what would have happened if Sarah had another child? I think
chaos.
You'd see further on. Yeah.
Chaos.
Right, exactly. Further on, you see, there would have been war between the two.
Oh. It was bad enough that the prophecy over Ishmael was, you will be a wild donkey of a man and you will live in enmity with your brothers. And he still is. In perpetuity. Yeah. So if there's been another child,
like Esau and Jacob.
Yeah, well, or this. Yeah, we're getting there. We're headed there. We're headed to Esau and Jacob. Anyway, all of these other kids settled south and east of Palestine, and that was west shore of the Persian Gulf to the land of Shur. Remember, Shur was where... Yeah, sure, we do. Abraham had gone during one of the famine times. It is that eastern portion, the northwest corner of the Sinai Peninsula. It's almost Egypt. Almost. So this is what we have. We can look at it here. Modern names are on the map. But this is the area known as Shur. This area right in here. This is the... It's called the Arabian Gulf on this because this map came from politically correct AI. Sorry, my bad. But then that area is where these descendants settled. How close is that to Palestine? Yeah, kind of picks up the tail of it there. The city called En Gedi is right here. Major... Israelite military base there. And if you ever saw the movie or read the book, Lawrence of Arabia, that's where he went through the desert, around the top. All the defenses of the city were faced to the sea because that was believed to be the only way in. Because this desert area was nuts. Nobody comes from there. That's how Lawrence of Arabia did that. That was the hinge point of the movie. The book is far, far better.
Why are the pictures always so barren? I mean, I've never seen a tree anywhere.
There aren't many.
That's terrible.
You have to go up north. This would be modern-day Lebanon up here.
Yeah.
And there's a reason they call them the Cedars of Lebanon. Heavily forested hills.
Oh.
And they're evergreens. They're related to the western cedar and the redwood tree.
Okay.
They're part of the same family. You get over here, you get palms. You get right along the coast, you do have some date palms and some regular palms. And the palmetto plants. Out here, there's less than 3 inches of rainfall in 12 months.
Oh my goodness.
That doesn't sustain a tree. It sustains scrub. It sustains bushes. It sustains lizards.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing. And if you drive through southern Arizona, you'll see similar things. It will sustain the cacti and other families of succulent, but it does not sustain the massive ponderosa pines that are in the northern half of the state.
Okay.
Same climate, even worse. So the Israelites settled in this area. Havilah, every biblical reference you can find has this as an open hollow die. City, uncertain location. So that was roughly at the bottom of that green arrow on there. And then that little yellow circle up there, that's where Isaac and Clay lived. There's all this territory down there that's worth next to nothing. And Isaac is up in that corner, living fat, going happy. And we find out just how fat, how dumb, and how happy. After Ishmael dies, he made it to 137. That's not bad. Yeah, I know, right? Those descendants had that territory we just looked at. Ishmael's line still lived, but they all lived, and this is exactly the phrase from the prophecy originally given to Hagar, over and against their brethren. all their extensions, they lived against them. Remember the prophecy? You will be a wild donkey of a man, and you will live over and against your brethren. And if history tells us anything, that included your immediate relatives. The numbers of tribal uprisings, outright wars, alliances, broken alliances, split kingdoms, it's been a mess. And it will continue to be a mess until the angel sounds the trumpet and God says, enough. Can't wait for that day, y'all. But that was the prophecy. It fulfilled it to the letter. Isaac, you saw the little yellow circle. You hear a lot of Roy. Again, every map, every biblical study aid, circle, hollow, city, uncertain location. They've got it nailed down to about 50 square miles. In the era of GPS satellites, that's really bad. That's horrible accuracy. Ironically enough, Isaac was living at the place where Hagar had her encounter with God. And it became named this for that. Sometimes God just blows me away with his symmetry. He sets something up, all these different things come winding in, all these trails. It's like the Amazon River. It starts way up in the hinterlands of the Andes. And there's, I don't remember, it's an amazing number of little creeks and rivulets and streams. The Danube is the same way. But major rivers, they start with all these fingers way up in an elevated area, and by the time they get to the ocean, the Amazon is over a mile wide at the mouth. A mile. Wow. And that's true for like the last 50 miles of it. The Danube spills in, and it's not a mile wide, but it is a multi-mouthed delta. This is exactly what God does. You know, it's one of those things, it recalls to mind Paul in Romans 1, verse 20. For what can be known of God, his incomparable power and greatness can be known from the created order. Look around. Look at a leaf. Pick up a leaf sometime. Myriads of veins and capillaries in a leaf this big. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, Isaac lived southwest of his dad's place, area, region. He was 40 when he married Rebecca. Cool. For that day and age? Yeah. A young parent. For us, that would be like, you know, married at 20 and children by 23. Oh, wait. That was my wife. I know. I robbed the cradle because I was all 23 when we got married. But according to verse 26, Rebecca was barren for 20 years. 20 years. Can anybody spell social stigma? There's something wrong with this lady. You've been married 20 years and you still don't have a kid? Yeah. But we get off to a good start. Isaac prays. She conceives. I could have had a V8. Look at that. What were we talking about in there? Prayer.
I wasn't be praying 20 years earlier.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Why did it take you 20 years to figure out I got no kids? Huh. Should I ask God about this? Let me ask my friends. No. We just totally sought the Lord.
Maybe he was depending on the promise.
He could have, yes, it's entirely, and you know, that brings out a great thing. Well, how many times do we think, oh, I think God's telling me to wait? But we don't take any steps in any direction for him to either shut the door, open the window, hip check us to one side. See, I'm a hip check guy. If I don't get a forward in the back of the head, I don't pay attention. And that actually, that was very, very literal in my case. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but in a box at home, I had a letter from my congressman appointing me a slot at the United States Air Force Academy. That was my goal from 8 years old. I made it. And then I went on a youth group trip, spiritual enough, and went skiing. Youth director says, hey guys, one more run and back to the band. Yeah. I didn't make it back to the band. On that last run, I dug a tip, bindings didn't release, and I pulled 2 vertebrae in my neck that far apart. So if you ever stand too close behind me, you see a 10 centimeter incision point. And it's literal. There's a wire in there. That's why this thing doesn't get left someplace. But it changed the course of my entire life. My entire life. So I get it. If he was saying, well, I'm going to sit and wait, but he didn't take any steps. Although I suspect. Yeah, I imagine they were taking steps to try to conceive. I can't conceive that they wouldn't. Sorry. But, yeah. God does want us to move. Psalm 119:105. Your word is a light unto my path and a lamp to my feet. All right, if you're carrying a lantern down here, how far ahead can you see? 4 feet. Then you step into it and you get 4 feet more. Step into it, you get 4 feet more. Pretty soon you're walking. A lot of times God guides us. And you're right, if he was just sitting on his duff waiting, but then, Lord, how come it took him 20 years to pray? Well, we don't know. We just know that he did. It's a good start, Lenny.
Well, and we are, I'm like Isaac.
Okay.
I'm the same way. I'll have a need, I'll ask God to do it, but I won't do anything because I'm afraid, that I've done it and God hasn't done it. And maybe that was exactly how Isaac was feeling, that, yes, I want a son, I want a child, but I don't want to do it the way my dad did.
Right. Yes, I'm sure he heard the family stories every Thanksgiving. Oh, man, we got to listen to Dad Mom tell this again. Oh. But yeah, finally he does. He prays. God answers. She conceives. But then she has this difficult pregnancy. Again, OBGYN's house. My dad's books were all on the lower shelves. We could read anything we wanted. And unfortunately, I read a handful of those and I've been scarred inside ever since. There's this struggle going on. As soon as those kids were able to be felt, they start kicking each other. That's, okay, we got siblings here.
Beautiful.
She inquires of the Lord now. God, what on earth is this war going on in here? What is going on? Well, the answer she got was curious. It came in the form of a prophecy. God is taking a direct finger. I can't say hand because it would have been too big, but a finger. In this, you're going to have twins, lady.
Oh, man.
Double diapers. That's a terrible thing. Yeah, you know, it makes you wonder how Hakamon did it.
Were these the first twins?
I suspect not, but they're the first ones recorded in the biblical line of Abraham.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the Bible didn't care about whether or not multiple births got recorded, but these were important. These twins were critical. I have no idea if they lived in a bed of straw. I just like... Two nations are in you. Two nations. This is a little different than saying, yeah, you're having twins. You can deal with twins. I got two nations in here? No wonder it's like the UN in a bicker fest. You know, it's like, wow. Two peoples will be divided from you. Oh, no. That did not mean a C-section. It just meant that people would be, there were two complete people groups going to be divided out of the two in her womb. One will be stronger. Even kittens and puppies, that's true. You get a dominant one, and then you get the run. But then he goes one more step. The strong one, the older one, is going to serve the runt, the young. Say, what? Really? You know, we're told in the birth story of Christ, all the things that the angel said, all the things that with her cousin Elizabeth, all that, Mary pondered these things and treasured them up in her heart. I've got to think Rebecca here is just, I've got a lot to think about here. I've got a lot to think about. Because this is completely backward to those cultural norms, right, Debbie? Uh-oh. The second one is going to be the overlord. This is two consecutive times. God said, Abraham, Isaac is your line. And now he's telling Rebecca, and therefore Isaac, the second one is the one that's important. Whoa. In due time, she was due.
Do you think that was because God told Rebecca this that caused her favor?
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah. She had this little seed planted. Your second kid is going to be the special one. And that didn't mean on the spectrum. Your second kid is going to be the one that's going to have overlordship over your first. But then we get a different flavor when we understand what they go. The first one coming out, apparently red and covered in hair. I mean, all newborns are red and they're usually angry looking, but this one had a lot of hair too. You know, and so they named him Esau. Harry. Tiger. You know, kid comes out, midwife goes, check this out. Oh, his name's Harry.
Sometimes I was wondering why the Bible, when the Bible says, when they were born, the first one and the second one grab on his feet.
Exactly.
So
they were still fighting on the way up.
God helped us.
Yeah.
The problem.
Yes.
And then later on, when it's happened,
and then it all falls into place, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And when we get into the latter chapters of Genesis, shortly before we move into the life of Joseph, it finally falls into place for Jacob.
Oh.
He has this aha moment. And it's fabulous when we reach it. It's wow. And suddenly, the God of his father and grandfather became his God. But it took, Jacob was an old guy, though. Well, not completely old, but it took him a long time to put that together.
Esau said, forget the red stew. Give me some stew to eat.
Yeah. And like you just mentioned, the second kid comes out, he's got a hold of his brother's heel. Like, where do you think you're going? Trying to pull him back in? Who knows? He's like, you're taking my place, dude. Let me out. And that's exactly what they named him. Jacob. Again, the midwife looks and goes, well, isn't he just a little grasper? The name carries the connotation of supplanter, but the root is for the term of heel grasper, one who deceives to achieve his ends. And sure enough, he came out with his fist firmly on that heel.
And Harry's always saying, why is he always tagging along?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you are twins. It's not like, you know. But as we read into their story later, we find out that Jacob really never was brought to heel, if you'll excuse the expression. Not only are the names descriptive and perfectly appropriate for the birth story, the birth narrative, they were prophetic. And God has this wonderful way of putting things together like that. For instance, when Ahaz was afraid of his northern neighbors in the kingdom era, the split kingdom, Israel on the north and Judah down south, Ahaz was freaking out about the Syrians and two northern neighbors banding together against him. And so God said that, Isaiah, go talk to this man. And Isaiah says, no way. I'm not going to ask for a sign. I wouldn't test God like that. It was subterfuge. But Isaiah then says, to a young maiden in your kingdom will be born a child. And before that child is 3 years old, those three kings will be nothing. He shall be called what? Emmanuel. God with us. This is God's standard. It's his, what do they call it? M.O. His modus operandi. Even though Latin wasn't around at the time. Yeah.
Is there any, okay, where up until now in the scriptures, where it actually states that the firstborn should inherit everything?
No.
Yeah, and that's...
It was the law of the land in which they lived.
And so that was a man-made principle, and God is showing, hey, that's not my principle.
Exactly. It came from time immemorial, because the eldest son, because remember at this point, women did not have rights. The eldest son was the inheritor to everything dad had. Whether it was a palace alongside a river or a shack up against the palace wall. And you're right. Human principle, God's principle.
Right.
Guess who wins? Yeah, we did. That's not even a guess. And at this point, as the boys grow up, the first family fracture comes into the open. And this was a dysfunctional family, to use the modern term.
To say the least.
Esau, he was a very skilled hunter, a full-on outdoorsman, robust, probably brawny, because you don't haul a robot home if you're, built like me. Jacob, a tent dweller, a mama's boy. I didn't say that. But the term contains within it the root for the term civilized. He sat around with his mom drinking tea with the pinky extended. But this was a sharp contrast word to Esau's descriptor. Here's this robust outdoorsman, and here's this tent dweller who hangs around and does tently type things.
The dishes.
Yes. This was the captain of the football team versus the star home ec student. Who wins? Well, normally you say, the big guy can take it easy. Each parent played favorites. Oops, missed. Isaac, Esau. And we're told right in the text, because he loved the meat he brought home. Okay, spank it with his stomach. Weight of the man's heart. Yeah, Esau, you win. At least for dad. Rebecca, Jacob. Was that because she knew something, pre-knew something? Or was that just because he hung around the tent? And they bonded over that. We're not told. We're just told that Isaac's favorite was Esau. Rebecca's favorite was Jacob. The thought flickens. Later on, back at the ranch. Kids are a little older now. They're independent men, they're doing their own thing, but they're still in the family unit, which was extremely normal. Esau has been out doing Esau stuff. Hunting, ranching, punching cows, I don't know. He comes in from the outdoors, and he comes up to where the fire is. Jacob's sitting there cooking this stuff. We're told later it was a lentil stew, or a lentil soup, which gave it a reddish hue. And God loves a pun. So do I, but he created it. It's his fault. Hey, give me some of that red stuff. We came out all red and hairy. Connective tissue, right? This is an impulsive demand. He looks, he sees, he wants. Boy, that sounds like James. None of you should say when you are tempted, God is tempting me, rather. You're tempted when you look, when you see, when you desire, then you're hooked. Ron?
Well, isn't it technically, correcting me, even Esau came out first, he became, quote, the older brother, even though he was hanging on the hill.
Yep.
So, older brother gets to speak.
Big brother wants to. Yeah, he wants some of yours. Mm-hmm. If he wants that toy, he's going to take it. And his dad isn't going to do anything about it. His mom might, but she doesn't have the same authority in that house. Hannah's house. Goat hair house. Jacob. Sure. No worries. Just one condition. I mean, he could have taught Machiavelli stuff. Sell your birthright. You know what you want. Somebody less bluff and hearty and impulsive than Esau might have said, hold it, hold it. You want what? Nope, I want food. Jacob says, then swear to it.
Uh-oh.
He's bringing in a binder. And that's not a three-ring folder. It's a legal contract. Yes. He's bringing in the law on his side. Swear to it. I can just imagine there was probably one or three servants hanging around, and they're hearing this. So he's got witnesses. Esau, well, yeah, Jacob locks up this transfer by demanding the oath. Esau, whatever, just feed me. Wow, you don't plan ahead very much, do you, pal? No. Jacob got what he wanted. He got the oath, thereby transferring the rights of the firstborn to himself. Already, God's plan is, in effect, using the nature of the two children. Now, he knew it was going to happen, but he structured the kids that way. And then the family environment fostered it. Nature, nurture? Yes. Nature plus nurture set this up. He gave Esau what Esau wanted, living for the moment. But then Scripture says very specifically, Esau despised that birthright. He was so indifferent to it because he got what he wanted, when he wanted it, and nothing else mattered to him. He might have been the first undiagnosed ADHD kid. We don't know. And then two key differences are highlighted in these boys. Esau lived only in the moment.
Goldfish?
Yes. Attention span of less than 3 seconds.
Can you say that again?
What? I didn't say that. What did I say?
I don't know.
No, people have accused me of ADHD before, and I always tell them,
hey, wait, want to go ride bikes later? Oh, sorry.
You know, Jeff?
Yeah, Leonard, please, rescue us.
Esau probably thought, I've got everything I want. What a birthright. Well, no, I can go out, I can do this, I can do that. So he gave it away.
Yep.
Jacob saw the importance of the birthright.
Yep. Besides, Esau was big and brawny. He could take whatever he wanted if he had to, right? But then with this, I want what I want when I want it mentality, no forethought. He did not think ahead. He lived for the immediacy. And we all know folks like that. And if you're a friend of somebody like that, sometimes it has to be a role to gently tug on the reins. Gently. Because you could get a hoof right in the forehead. Jacob, shrewd dealer. He had plenty of time to sit around and scheme stuff. I'm sure he chatted with his mom a lot when they were both in the tent. Always thinking ahead. Always alert to the main chance. Sarah, I saw a thought go through there.
Well, it says he was famished. Now, I don't know how many of us have ever been famished. But I'm assuming if you really are famished, your thinking is effective.
It's true. It says, I don't care. I'm starving. Give me that. Or famished. And that's probably the better word. But then I have to step back and ask, do you really think he was? He was the scion of a wealthy family. There would be no shortage of food. He came in. We don't know where he was. We weren't told how long he was out there. You really think he was wasting away to nothing?
Yeah.
I can't see that, but...
He might think he was.
In his mind... Oh, gosh, it's been 3 hours since I ate. I'm starving to death.
Because he was a hunter.
He was a hunter?
He was up at dawn. Probably heading out. And if maybe he just grabbed, a biscuit or something. So he's been out. traveling everywhere, and it's coming back, and the beautiful was too aroma. Triggers all.
Ooh, that looks good. Give me some.
Yeah, give me.
Yeah. Okay, maybe he skipped breakfast.
And he is. I'm starving.
Well, I just have a hard time believing that he was starving to death.
Yeah, well, that's a term we use.
But that mindset, yes.
Kids come in from something and says, what's there? What food? I'm starving. They use that term.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah.
I got home from football practice and went straight to the fridge.
Yeah.
After you had two hamburgers at McDonald's.
We're supposed to mention that.
I've been there.
Jacob was also ambitious. So, we get another famine. Usual results. Isaac moves northwest a little bit to the coast, back into the territory of Abimelech. Same guy or his son, we're not sure. And he follows his father's pattern. By famine happened, we go share with Abimelech because the coastal range is more fertile. Tripartite blessing is renewed. Isaac, I will be with you. Manifold blessings in the land, and all nations blessed by your descendants. So there we go. This is the area we're talking about, right there. Again, modern names up there because it's generated by political current AI. That's where Isaac was living when the famine hit. It's very rocky, hill country. Not a lot grows there without a ton of sweat and hard work. The green circle, the more fertile coastland area, was where he moved. Problem is, there's no other people there. The promise included a reminder, Isaac, obey like your father did, keep the faith, keep my commands, keep the charge. In other words, don't cut up your visa. Dayton?
Is this kind of a step back in time?
This was probably said before they actually made this move, because the promise is reiterated, and then he moves in the narrative, and then he comes back and says, Isaac, this is how you fulfill that promise.
But I'm trying to figure out how he could pass off Rebecca as his sister if they had kids.
They had kids. And there's nothing that says the two boys went with them. But we assume they did. But then if nobody asked questions, but then we had a David and Bathsheba thing where, you know, a little later in the narrative, Abimelech looks out and sees them behaving husband-wifely. Yeah, the line of the promise must remain pure. Nuts. We'll stop. Yes, Laura.
Did Esau pretty much disappear from the scene? Esau's descendants?
No. They became the Edomites because he drew the name Red, Edom, which is red. They became the Edomites. Eventually, the Edomites were subsumed by the later conquest of the Israelites. But until that point, yeah. We need somebody to close us in prayer and throw us out of here. Let us leave. Anyone? Bueller?
Thank you, Lord, for the message. Share with us this morning and ask that you would please of our own hearts take it to heart and understand it's your will, Lord, that we have to listen to you. And we thank you for the goodness you shared today and go with all of us as we go in different directions. We might be sharing your word in your name.
Amen. Thanks.
And I think some of this is happening.